Welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution on Podclips. This podcast is designed to offer valuable perspectives and insights to individuals engaged in the mediation process. Listeners will benefit from the experience of the profession's most accomplished mediators who share compelling stories of conflict and the lessons they have learned from handling challenging and intriguing disputes. Throughout the episodes, you will hear firsthand accounts of how conflict has impacted the lives of those involved and discover how mediation enables individuals to move forward free from the burden of ongoing disputes. The discussions on this podcast provide practical guidance on addressing and overcoming difficult issues, helping listeners achieve more satisfying outcome in mediation. Whether you're a mediator, an attorney, or someone who has participated or is considering participating in mediation, you'll find actionable advice and encouragement. Your host, Len Levy, is a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution. Len brings extensive experience, having litigated complex cases for over 30 years before transitioning to mediation in 1998, and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. Len Levy's expertise and dedication set the stage for insightful conversations and meaningful learning for all listeners. And now, your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Season 6 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast designed to add tools to your mediation toolbox. We are brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. Now, in each podcast episode, you been hearing a story about conflict, the impact it had on the lives of those involved, how resolution was achieved, and in some instances, not achieved, and the lessons to be learned from both the conflict and its resolution or non-resolution. Many details may be altered to maintain the essential confidentiality of mediation while still capturing the core of the conflict and its resolution. And the entire process. Today, we're going to be talking about a not uncommon situation, neighbors who are disagreeing about something. And we have as our guide through this, Mike Balmages, who he's been a guest on our show before, and always interesting, always with at least 1, 2, 3, or 10 takeaways that are very useful, which I have also integrated into my practice. And he's been a general counsel, a transactional lawyer, a trial lawyer, and as a mediator in neutral, he's had a great success in helping litigants resolve disputes in at least 1,000, maybe by this time, 1,500 cases. His friendly nature and ability to find common ground contribute to his easy rapport with litigants and their attorneys, while his determination to get cases settled is evident at each hearing. And you're going to hear a bit as to how Michael has approached mediation. He's done some things, and quite frankly, this morning I was made aware of an article in the Orange County Lawyer, the March 2026 volume, and the article is one that that Mike Balmages had authored, and it is basically, it's entitled Mediation, the Scene of the Crime, and it really centers on how Mike gets into these cases, how he internalizes the things that the parties might be going through. And so without any further ado, Mike, thank you again for joining us on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Len, you're welcome, and good morning to you. The first takeaway I want to mention before we get into any of these facts, well, first of all, I've been fortunate to have mediated a lot of neighbor disputes. And they often involve fences. They almost always involve boundaries and something sticking over a boundary or the fence often being over the boundary. But the first takeaway I want to just put out there at the beginning is related to that article, The Scene of the Crime. One thing I have found very helpful in neighbor disputes is for me to go to the property, to go take a look what they're talking about. And I've done that in some cases before the mediation. I've called up counsel and said, hey, you guys mind if I go out there? Other times I've done it without calling up counsel. I happen to be in the neighborhood. I know where the properties are. I go look. And more frequently, I've done it between sessions of mediation where we just didn't get it settled. We talk about possibly having another session. I ask them, hey, do you guys mind if I go out there and take a look at this property? And sometimes I meet with counsel out there and sometimes I don't. I found that very helpful, at least for me, to understand what's really going on. A couple of weeks ago, I had a boundary dispute. Well, actually, it was an easement dispute out in one of the canyons here in Orange County. And my wife and I cruised out there, about a 20-minute ride from our home. We cruised out there and we went on this private road back into one of the canyons. And it was really illuminating. I mean, I could see what they were arguing about. So that's my first takeaway on these kind of cases.
Okay. Well, look, let's get into the factual situation that we had discussed as far as a neighbor dispute, which is, as you were telling me, not atypical, but there's some interesting aspects of it. And this one, as I understand, involves a relatively small strip of land.
Yeah, and neighbor disputes often involve a neighbor who has lived there for a really long time and a neighbor who just moved in. And this one was that case also. I mean, that's a really common scenario. There's been this established practice, quote, easement, unquote, or something for decades sometimes, get that a new person buys one of the pieces of property and they try to change things. So this involved two pieces of property that are about 2 miles from where I live. And it's on a kind of a countryfied road, as much as anything can be countryfied nowadays in Orange County. And there were two large pieces of property, each with about a 200-foot frontage, the other with about 150-foot frontage, and both extending back at least 200 feet back from the road. It's a piece of property that I have driven by 1,000 times because it's my way from here, from where I live to downtown Tustin. This is the route I take to get by those. But the property that was owned, where the owners had lived there for a long time, had a little strip next to its driveway where it parked its cars. That strip, when I originally thought about it, I thought it was about 10 feet by 20 feet long, and that's about the size of the strip. I thought all of that was in dispute, but actually only 6 feet of it. I looked up the case today. Only 6 feet of it was the new owner who bought the property adjacent to it went and reclaimed 6 feet of that 10-foot strip. On those 6 feet was a telephone pole and the guide wire for the telephone pole and a lot of weeds and things and natural growth. The older family, the family that had lived there for a long time, was using it as kind of a parking area. And then one day they came out and there was a chain link fence 6 feet into their parking area. The new, after talking with each other and getting nowhere, a lawsuit was filed by the people who'd lived there for a long time trying to say they had an easement, either equitable or prescriptive or some right to use that property. And this lawsuit was battled by some very high-powered lawyers. The people who bought the new house, or not the new house, the people who had moved in most recently had one of Orange County's best construction and real property lawyers, who I happen to know, great lawyer. The other side had an excellent lawyer, both of whom I had done mediations before, prior to this also. And this was a real battle. At one point, I proposed a solution. So it went on and on and on. And it didn't settle. You look like you want to ask me a question.
Yeah, I do. What was the pre-mediation discussion? Clearly, the pre-mediation discussion did not include, I'm new to the neighborhood, and I noticed there's this piece of land. I need about 6 feet of it. There wasn't that kind of discussion. There was the presence of the fence. Here you are. Here's the situation. And no communication, in other words, before, right?
Yeah, that's my recollection and my understanding is that, so the telephone pole was right on the border of the 6 foot parcel that the 6 foot part that actually, according to surveys, belonged to the new owners. And they went and put a chain link fence right next to that telephone pole running down there. So the older owners could not no longer park their cars or guest cars or whatever on that 10-foot piece of property, four of which they owned and six of which it turned out they did not own. But it, there was, as far as I recall, there was no discussion. There was a fence.
Okay.
And the fence was put up. The people who bought, who were moving in, the newer people, took down the entire structure that was there and were building a new structure. It was going to be, if I remember correctly, a 7,000-square-foot mega house. Construction was ongoing while the lawsuit was pending. So we had our first mediation session over Zoom. I mean, yeah, it would have been during the pandemic. So it was been over Zoom. We didn't get it settled, but we did. We decided to have another session. And I suggested that I visit the piece of property, which I did. I went out to the piece of property, and defense counsel, the new owner's counsel, was there as well as the new owner. I got to tour their partially completed 7,000 square foot mansion and looked at the property. And I looked at the, and I had seen, as again, I had driven by this piece of property hundreds of times because I've lived here for 45 years or whatever, right by it. I'd driven by it that many times. But I never noticed it. But now, inspecting it, it had this telephone pole on it. I suggested to the new owner and her lawyer, why do you want that piece of property? Give it to them. It detracts from everything. But not the lawyer necessarily, but the litigant was insistent that that was hers and she was going to get it.
Okay. It was just simply, that's mine. But what interest did she really have? She sounds like she didn't have any real use for it.
She was going to build a fence that ran along the whole 200 feet of her property, the frontage of her property. And she didn't want to have to cut it off 4 feet short of the property line and have to have it shoot back 20 feet and then go over it. You know, she said she had a rationale for it.
Okay.
So there was a rationale for it. But very unyielding rationale. I mean, unyielding in terms of the approach to this. There was really nothing that was going to be able to solve this case. I made a Mia's proposal at one point. Are you ready for that? Do you need more facts about
that? Let's get into a couple of more facts, okay? The use of that property by the other party, the party that had it taken away, right, so to speak, were there any alternatives that were discussed in terms of how both parties' interests could be reconciled here? I mean, I know you did a mediator's proposal, but what kinds of discussions and what attitudes did the parties bring to that mediation, to the actual mediation session?
The new owner's attitude was, here's the surveys, we hired this high-powered survey firm, we own this piece of land and we want this piece of land. That was pretty much it. There was not a lot of give and take. There was no give and take on that. That was it. And the old owner saying, well, we've been parking there. We've lived here for 10 years now. And our predecessors had lived, you know, this had gone back 30 or 40 or 50 years. Our predecessors had lived it like, you know, had used it in the same way. And in addition to that, we have some utility lines that run under this piece of property and they've got to remain. So that was one solution we talked about. If in fact they're going to lose the parking spot, at least the utility lines can continue to run under the piece of property. And there were some hydrants right out on the street. When these houses were originally built, this was a rural piece of the part of Orange County in which I live. Mm-hmm. Now nothing is rural anymore, but it kind of retains. So there had been a fire hydrant and electrical boxes and other things right out on this once country road. And hookups for that ran underneath this strip of land onto the older piece of property.
Okay. And so basically you've got two immovable parties who are just, I'm right, that's the way it is. And were there any kind of, let's say, nuanced legal arguments about there being a prescriptive easement, things of that nature that entered into the discussion? Was there any, in other words, did the party that put up the fence, did they have any risk in terms of going forward?
Well, in the sense that there's always risk. And yes, there were claims of a prescriptive easement. I looked at the file today. It's been several years. I looked at, there were claims of a prescriptive easement, a quote, equitable easement. I mean, I don't even remember what those things are at this point. I couldn't tell you what either kind of those easements are at this point, and there were and they're just kind of an equitable argument. Hey, we this has been part of this piece of property's usage for decades, and now all of a sudden you just go out there and put up a fence, and we can't use it anymore. Yeah, so in the briefs, and I looked at the briefs this morning, there was prescriptive easement arguments and equitable easement arguments, and then there were counter arguments in the defense briefs saying those things, one, I don't know what those things are, and two, you wouldn't meet the criteria even if I knew what they are. So yeah, there was that kind of stuff too.
Okay, so it's basically, how did you define your task in terms of, okay, this is what I have to overcome in order to help the parties reach a settlement, going into the mediation. We're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to give you some thought. On the other side of our break, we'll hear how you approached the mediation, knowing what the attitudes of the parties were. I'm Len Levy, and we're talking with Mike Balmages about some neighbors, and we'll be back.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitrations, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and we are discussing with Mike Balmages a neighbor dispute. And Mike, before the break, said, okay, we're starting the mediation. First thing that occurs to me, what did you have to overcome? And what did you perceive at that point you had to overcome in order to get the parties into a resolution?
Well, you kind of had asked me about the attitudes of the parties and what I how I was going to deal with that. I did not know the attitudes of the parties other than through the briefs and through I have a pre-mediation phone call with counsel. And the briefs argued the history and they argued the prescriptive easements and that kind of stuff. And counsel, as I said, both of these lawyers were really good lawyers. And I'd worked with them before. So when I spoke to both of them, yeah, we could get this done. They were both very reasonable. I think that especially the defendant lawyer didn't take into account personality issues with his client that were going to be a problem. But in terms of how I planned, and I've had several lawyers shadow me on mediations and settlement conferences, and they often ask me, what was your plan for that case? And this may sound a little flippant, but I don't have a plan. I don't have a plan when I go into a mediation. Each one is unique in its own way. What I do develops as I'm in the mediation. So I don't know if I had a plan in particular on this one. I was familiar with the property. I was familiar with certainly with property border disputes and boundary disputes, and was ready to just kind of see what was going on here.
If I recall, your approach is to start not with a joint session, but with meeting in caucus with each party, correct?
Correct. I do not have joint sessions. That I actually just had an article published in Plaintiff Magazine on that very subject about not having joint sessions. So I do have them when it seems appropriate, but that's after speaking with counsel, and I'm going to get everybody's agreement to it. And I'm going to carefully control it. But no, I do not start with opening joint sessions.
So you're armed with whatever information the attorneys talk to you about in your pre-mediation phone calls. And it sounds like one of the attorneys, at least the attorney for the defendant, did not really get an in-depth idea of what his client's attitudes were.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we had, as I said, we had two sessions of a mediation in this case. After the second session, he was substituted out. This case went to trial. And again, this gentleman is an excellent lawyer and one of Orange County's highest powered real property kind of lawyers. But apparently his suggesting that the client maybe accept the mediation proposal I eventually made or try to get a resolution did not sit well with the client.
So you went through the usual kind of back and forth Okay, what do you want? Maybe vetting some solutions, right?
Oh, absolutely. We had solutions that we talked about, like putting up a kind of, I think they used to call them pony walls, a small wall over part of the area, or possibly planting some kind of plants in a certain part of it. We talked about a lot of issues like that. And it looked like we were making progress, but every time it looked like we were, go back to the defendant, and the defendant would say, no, that's not good enough. I want my piece of property.
So it sounds like the defendant is kind of a, this is my solution. That's the way it's going to be. And if they're willing to go along with my solution, that's fine. But if not, we're going to trial.
Yeah, at one point, towards the end of it, I did make a media's proposal. And I don't know if we're there yet. I can tell you what that proposal was.
Well, before you tell me exactly what the proposal was, let's talk a little bit generally about what you perceive the purpose of a media's proposal. What do you tell parties to get them to either agree to do a mediator's proposal in the first instance, and perhaps how the mediator's proposal works?
I introduce myself and the mediation process, and I tell the litigants that my goal, and we've talked about this in the past, my goal for the day is not particularly fairness. I don't know what's fair. I'm never going to know what's fair. I'm not in their shoes. I haven't lived this thing, and I'm not the arbiter of what is fair and all this. My goal is to make parties help parties make smart decisions. So that's part of it. At some point in a mediation, often the lawyers ask me, sometimes really early, often ask me to make a media's proposal, and it looks like we're going nowhere. Sometimes I will suggest a media's proposal when I've run out of options. And all this, and I get consent from counsel. But I, at that point, when I'm ready to make a media's proposal, I have vetted it. I've spoken about the ideas that are running in through my brain with both sides a lot to see how they feel about those ideas. And my proposal is based upon sort of the art of the possible, what I think can get done in this situation with these parties. And usually they work. I mean, almost always one party will accept my proposal, and most always both parties do, because I have very much vetted those proposals. We've been negotiating for hours. We've been talking about the history, the law, the fact, everything, and that the goal here is to make a smart decision. And part of making a smart decision is, of course, is to take into account the uncertainty of litigation, as to what the vagaries of litigation, and the other main driver is the cost of litigation, the cost of taking this case, of disclosing the experts, hiring the experts, deposing the experts, going doing all the rest of the pretrial stuff and taking it to trial, and how very often the amount of money the parties are going to spend doing all that cumulatively is less than they're fighting about, or less than can solve the problem. So. There's no magic to me as a proposal. It's my attempt to get both parties to see a smart solution out of their situation.
Okay, so very often, I, and as mediators' proposals are more and more in use, I will get from time to time, very early in the mediation, why don't you just do a mediator's proposal? My hesitancy is not having a feel for what is possible here. And getting the idea of what we're trying to accomplish, and that is a possible solution that both sides will find acceptable. It's not, as you say, the idea is not I have to do what's fair, as you say, who the heck knows what fair is? And it's not even the idea of what's better for one party or good for one party. We as mediators very seldom get the opportunity to get into the psychological aspect of what may be stopping someone from getting to yes. And we're not talking about in this particular case. I'm going to ask you, how difficult is it to get an idea of concepts that each party might buy into?
As opposed to money.
Correct.
Again, I don't know if I can answer that question other than an ad hoc case-by-case basis. I've been with these people for two full sessions. I'd listened to them. I thought that the older owners had a reasonable request that they had been using this property. I didn't think it was unreasonable from my perspective. I thought that they were a little bit more malleable or pliable—that's the wrong word. Not that I was going to change them, but they were going to be a little more reasonable. So I agree with you on early MIAS proposals. I get those requests all the time too, and I won't do them. I say, I don't think we're ready to do that. I don't understand it. Let's see where this is going to go. I mentioned to you before we got started today, I had a mediation yesterday. Usually when I do MIAS proposal, I give the parties a few days to think about them. I used to not do that. It used to be an instantaneous thing. Give me, you got 10 minutes to let me know. I've learned that the parties get wiser the more time they, not the more time, but if they have some time to think about a proposal. And me using the word wiser is kind of incorrect also, because I don't really know what's wise. They get wiser because they accept my proposal, I guess, by definition.
Right.
That's wiser. But in this case, I bounced off some ideas. And I came up with a solution. If you want to hear what my proposal was, I can.
Oh, absolutely.
The proposal was that the older family, not the older in age, but who had been there the longest, got to keep the that piece of property, the disputed piece of property, until either they moved from the property or their children got out of high school, and they accepted that. And I forget how old their children were. Their children were probably 10 and 12, somewhere in that range, if I remember correctly. So it would be either when they sold the property or for another 6 or 7 years. And they accepted that proposal. The other side did not accept that proposal. And the case went to trial. I eventually found out what happened at trial.
Before we get to that, look, a couple of things. There are times when we're talking about how mediators' proposals work, explaining that to the parties, the concept of if you say no, you don't know if the other side says yes, and that this is the last and final chapter in this mediation, and it's if it doesn't settle with the mediator's proposal, we're done. Now, full confession, notwithstanding that, I think you do, sometimes follow up and say, okay, you said no. What was your real problem with this? Did you do that in this particular case?
I don't remember if I did that in this case, but I do that a lot. I do mm-hmm. that a lot also. And I think I told you yesterday, I made a MIAS proposal in a case, and it's one mm-hmm. I didn't give time. The lawyers wanted it. We'd gone at it all day, and the lawyers wanted me to come up with a number. Mm-hmm. And when I gave the proposal to the plaintiff, I said to the plaintiff, I'm not going to even pretend that this is fair. Again, I told you at the beginning, I don't know what's fair. You're going to probably think this is unfair, but I think this is smart to do. It's going to get it over with and all that. But you got your lawyer here. Mm-hmm. And you guys, I'm going to give each side like 10 minutes or whatever to think about this, because that's what they wanted. They had a lot of stuff coming up in the next couple of days, and they wanted to get this done. Prior mm-hmm. to that, I said, you guys let me know. I'll come back in 10 minutes or whenever you call me back. And I'm going to go give the other side the same thing. So very often, I don't try to pretend that my MIAS proposal is good for anybody, mm-hmm. other than in the sense that it's smart to get this case over with.
Right, right. And there's something else that you mentioned, and that is making a mediator's proposal too early. And there are a couple of pitfalls, and let's talk about that for just a moment. My feeling is you make it too early, you lose a couple of things. One, the ability to vet what might work. And second, if it's a number, too early sometimes will set a floor or a ceiling and make further negotiations between the parties more difficult. In other words, do some harm. So those are my thoughts going into it. And what do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I've even had lawyers kind of accuse me of that really late on when I've asked them, can I make a media's proposal on all this? And they want to know if you're making it here, this is going to be a floor, it's going to be this or that. And I don't have to make it. If mm-hmm. you don't want me to make it, I won't make it. But yes, absolutely. Right. You don't want to make it too early, and you want to know the case a lot better. You want to know what the parties are thinking. You want to have run ideas by them. Well, what if I do this? What if they come to this area? Will you guys be interested in that? That kind of thing.
We're going to get into some of the takeaways, some more of these takeaways. And in this particular instance, I think you said that the mediator's proposal simply was not accepted by the party who had been building the mega mansion, right?
Correct.
So We're going to be talking about mediators' proposals and other things that and other tools that mediators use to help get cases settled, because applying the right mediation tools is really the key. It's an art form. There are very few absolutes. Practicing laws is an art form. Practicing mediation is an art form as well. And we're going to be right back after a word from the American Institute of Mediation.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator, because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and my guest is Michael Balmages. And we've been discussing a case and the takeaways from the case that are, it's a case that didn't settle. It's a case that apparently went to trial. And I think you've alluded to, Mike, that the result was essentially what you had proposed. Am I misreading that?
No, that's the way I found out about that is I attended my grandson's soccer game at the local high school, and that the person who had bought the new house, was building the mega house, had two sons on the same soccer team with my grandson, which I did not know. But I'm sitting in the stands watching the game, and this woman turns to me and says, "You don't remember me." And I look at her, and she looks familiar. And she said, "Well, I'm Mrs. So-and-so." And I said, "Oh, yeah, wow." I said, how'd that turn out? She said, "Well, we went to trial. And after 2 days of trial, the judge stopped us and said, you guys need to settle this. And he proposed a solution." I said, "Well, what was the solution?" It was almost identical to what I said. "Let them have this piece of property for the next several years, and then you get it back." And so that, in a way, that was gratifying to hear that. But in a way, it was, gee, what a waste of energy for everybody on this thing when it could have been settled much earlier, but time-wise and money-wise.
Be interesting to know, of course, not always privy to stuff like this, but to know the other side is the one that rejected the proposal, right? Your proposal. And so do you know what thought process might have gone into
the side that rejected it? Was the person in the stands of the soccer game was the person who had rejected it.
Oh, okay. So why was it rejected? I'm wondering.
As far as I know, it was rejected for the same reason that this was their piece of property and they were going to have their property. They were going to build their 200-foot fence instead of 196-foot fence out in front. And that's what I know about that. And her lawyer was thrown off the case. And so she got some other lawyer who I didn't know. And I didn't even know what had happened with the case. I assumed, I didn't know if they'd settled after me or they'd gone to trial until at this soccer game where I learned it had gone to trial.
Okay. So, look, one of the things that I am gathering from this is when we make a mediator's proposal, like so many other things in mediation, we're trying to figure out what tools of mediation, like a mediator's proposal, might work. Recognizing a couple of attributes of mediation. First, it's not a science. What tools to use is like what What paintbrush do you pick up? What colors do you use? What is going to work with the parties? And in a situation when we're dealing with just a dollar amount, coming up with a number sometimes becomes complex in and of itself. And could you just comment on things like that? And I think you might have written an article that dealt with overthinking it.
Yeah, well, overthinking is a big. I do a lot of webinars and panels about mediation with lawyers and with mediators also, and I talk about overthinking. I have a couple of slides. I think there's a Dostoevsky quote in one of my slides: "To overthink is a disease." And lawyers, they do overthink. We do. I was a lawyer. I overthought as a lawyer too. I don't want to move up too fast. I want to go down too slow. I don't want to think I'm going to go here, there. It's not my turn to bid. It's the ball's in their court. And I'll struggle with all that stuff. And I'll just give me a number. Just give me a number and let's move forward. Nothing you give me now binds you to anything. You don't have to go at a certain rate. Just give me a number. Lawyers do overthink. On the art versus science thing, I kind of make that joke every time when we're going back and forth with it's just monetary bids, typically. Mm-hmm. I'll mention to one of the parties, I said, you understand that your counsel and I, that this is scientific. There's no guesswork here. In fact, your lawyer remembers that class we had in law school where they told you exactly how much to bid in response to every counter bid on the other side. And then most of the time the lawyers will chuckle and the parties know I'm joking. Sometimes they don't. I say, that's a joke. I mean, this is not a science. This is an art. And it's kind of an abstract art, which we do. Another thing which I do, and I don't know if a lot of lawyers do this, we'll often get into this thing where, had this in yesterday's thing, where one party's at 600,000, another party's at 100,000, or at 50,000. And so the 600,000 guy will drop to 550 because they came up to 50. Then the 50,000 guy will go up to 55,000. So the other side will go down to 645. What are the numbers are? Then they go slowly, slowly, bit by bit. I'll get frustrated comments from counsel. Is there no way we can speed this up? Can we speed this up? Do you want to do a bracket? My response to brackets is typically, fine, we can do a bracket. I don't favor them because brackets always lead to counter brackets. And all people do is look at the midpoints anyway. But if you want to do a bracket, we can do one. Rarely do they do one after they say that. So, yeah, this is an art as to what we're doing. And as I said, I call it the art of the possible. I try to figure out what is possible. But my approach, when I've mentioned this recently to the lawyers when they asked me the question, can't we speed this up? My approach has been defined by one of my friends, a lawyer, another mediator at ADR Services, actually, as water torture. That the way I conduct these mediations, we're moving $1,000 at a time for 6 hours and all that. It's water torture. And I jokingly tell counsel that this friend of mine says it's water torture. I said, but I'm comfortable with that. It works. The water torture method works. And that helps me make media's proposals, too, because I have vetted this thing and gotten them as close as I can over several hours. And I've got a good idea as to where they'll go at that point. But I don't mind the water torture approach. Len, let me raise one more issue. You talked about this, I think you mentioned, we did before we started, this new opinion by the ADA, opinion 518, and what it says about how mediators are supposed to act, I guess, or be. I view my job as a mediator, and as a settlement judge when I sit as a pro tem, my job is to get cases settled. I'm not too concerned about philosophical descriptions of what my job is. My job is to get a case settled, and I'll use the tools that I have to get that done. So I don't think there's anything wrong with me thinking I want to get this settled.
Yeah, and look, very often when we're talking about, you know, moving this along, just throw out an example of how it can work. And simultaneously, you're going to be vetting the other sides and getting an idea of where the parties could go. And that's to say things like, look, if I can get them to offer X number of dollars, would this case settle? And I'm not saying that they will. I'm just saying that if I can get them to that particular point, if they will consent to do that, there, by the way, of course, it's always their idea, their decision as to whether to offer that. But putting in the hypotheticals, it's something that can move things along without the parties officially moving off of their positions. I remember one of the first times I did it, and an insurance adjuster was not used to that kind of negotiation. And we went back and forth about, well, if I get them to this, would you go to this other number? And if I can get them to that, would you go to this other number? Back and forth in both rooms. And at the end of the day, I said, okay, looks like we have a settlement at X number of dollars. And the adjuster looked at me and said, well, what was the sequence of bargaining? And I said, well, you officially never moved off of your original offer, and they officially never moved off of their original demand. But this is a number that both of you have said, if it's acceptable to the other side, we'll settle it. So he says, but what do I put in my report? In terms of what he was thinking was the sequence of bargaining. I said, you know something, why don't you make it up? All right. It doesn't matter. The case resolved. And it brings to mind things like there was a book out many, many years ago by the author's Tim Galway, if I recall correctly, called The Inner Game of Tennis. There's also, I think, The Inner Game of Golf and a few other. And basically, it is the idea of if you think about how to hit a tennis ball, when you are in the middle of playing your game, saying, you know, turn your body, get your racket back, follow through high, things like that. By the time you get through that thought process, the ball hits the fence behind you and you lose the point. The idea of the inner game of tennis is you use your best instincts, your muscle memory in terms of when the ball bounces, you're looking at the ball the whole time. You see bounce, you see it bounce, you say bounce. When you see it hit your racket, you say hit. And your muscle memory takes over. I'm kind of looking at things like the inner game of mediation. What does it feel like as a mediator we should apply? What tools should we apply? Now, that requires understanding what the pitfalls might be, as we've discussed here, in terms of a mediator's proposal. And understanding that addresses something that was written, I think, in an article recently in the Daily Journal, which basically came up with the idea that ABA opinion that you refer to, ABA opinion 518, restricts how mediators can use the mediator's proposal, but makes lawyers responsible for enforcing the boundaries. The article, there's some conclusions in the article that I do agree with in terms of having the attorneys involved in the process, because as a mediator, getting the attorneys involved and the parties involved in the process gives you an idea as to what kind of proposal might work. But the criticism of, and it was in the article, it says the heart of the opinion 518 is the mediator should not say that a proposed settlement is in a party's best interest. Well, okay, I think that might be a little bit of overthinking, because I'm not trying to talk about in making a mediator's proposal whether it's good for a particular party, whether it satisfies all of their interests. What I'm thinking about is applying the inner game of tennis, so to speak. Is this something that both sides are likely to agree to? And sometimes you have a party that says, and by the way, as we sit here, I have a mediator's proposal outstanding because an insurance company needed the adjuster needed to get authority, and it was going to take a couple of weeks to get that authority. And so you have situations like that that always enter into it as to how much time do we give the parties? What are the parties willing to do? There may be some discovery that depositions that are set, trials looming, things like that have to be pushed off. So you have to vet them. It's always the party's input that's going to influence whether to make a mediator's proposal. I'm a little long-winded on that, Michael, but if you have anything to say, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I have a lot to say in what you just said, okay. And it's not going to be in particular order. I was taking notes. First of all, that's interesting about that article talking about we can't say it's in the best interest of the party. First of all, I don't even know what that means, the best interest of the party. But I recall my mediation training years ago, BATNA and WATNA.
Right.
Best BATNA, best alternative to a negotiated agreement. So if those guys at the Harvard program on negotiation can use the phrase best alternative, I don't see why we can't say, so I can say to somebody, according to 518, I can't say it's in the best interest, but I can say this is the best alternative to a negotiated agreement or, going to trial. So in any event, that's a surprising phrase to me. I haven't read 518. I've read a lot of articles about 518, which quote parts of it, but I wasn't aware of that. As to speeding the process up, we've already touched on this. Two things are always suggested by counsel. Can't we speed this up? Can we get brackets? Or can't we speed this up? Can't you make your mediator's proposal? And I will not speed it up. I don't like brackets. I've already expressed that. And I will not do a speed it up a mediator's proposal. I do exactly what you do, but I've never had the reaction you had. I always say, look, if I can, look, I'm not going to tell them this, and it's not going to bind you. I'm not going to come back and you said this. But if I can get them to $500,000, will you guys go there? Oftentimes they say no, but I really know they mean yes. I mean, I just can sense they mean yes. But I do say that, I do that to both sides. Look, if I can get them down to $500, will you guys pay that? If I can get them up to $500, will you guys accept that? And very often I get the response, yes, but don't tell them that until they're ready to accept it. And I'll have from both sides. I actually just wrote an article where I quote that process, and I say, well, that leads me with a logical impasse that I can't. Both sides are telling me they'll go there if the other side will go there, but they won't go there until the other side will go there. So I said I ignore that and just tell, hey, bye, we got a deal, So let's see what else. What you were talking about, the tennis, the inner world of tennis, yeah, reminds me of a word that I'm not sure what it means, but the word is heuristic thinking, and I think that's intuitive kind of thinking kind of stuff. Don't spend a lot of time analyzing everything. Just do it. Mm-hmm. As I said, I tell the parties all the time, you're overthinking this. Just give me a number. We'll go from there. Mm-hmm. Another thing I do is, I don't know how if you do this or not. Do you ask parties top lines or bottom lines? I used to do that, and everybody lied to me anyway. So now.
Exactly. Exactly.
So now I say to them, by the way, I don't like asking top lines or bottom lines because everybody lies to me. I mean, I said this to the lawyers and their clients. And I said, but I'll tell you what, I've got a new approach. Lie to me a little. Give me some idea. Some idea where I got to get you in order to get this done. And they like that approach. And they say, I know they're going to lie to me. I know it's going to be lower than they have or higher, higher than they'll pay than they will accept and all that. In terms of getting the attorneys involved in the process, you mentioned that. And I've seen some articles on LinkedIn by the same author, I believe, of the article you're talking about, where he talks about that. And my response is the attorneys are always involved in the process. I don't make up the numbers. I don't just come out of the blue and say, I'm going to do me his proposal. I mean, I've spoken about this for hours, and I've heard their thoughts on the case and all this kind of stuff. And the attorneys, I emphasize to the litigants, well, here's the proposal's coming. You got a really good lawyer here. Follow his advice. But my suggestion to you guys is this is a better alternative to to get it done. I won't use the word best anymore because you're telling me the article or the 518 prohibits that. But I'm joking. I will use it, by the way. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts in kind of a scattered fashion on the topics you just talked about.
Right. Well, Mike, look, we can talk about mediators' proposals until the cows come home. Mediators' proposals, the articles that have been written about them, but it's recently in vogue with this. A discussion is recently had because of 518 and more than just 518, the interpretations of 518. I'm with you on this. I'm going to continue to mediate with the idea of seeing whether I can reconcile the party's interests. And if some people are more risk averse, they may want to avoid trial when, if I were a practicing attorney, I would advise them, go ahead and go to trial. That is always going to be an element, whatever the interest was of the party in your case with the mini mansion of keeping this land. It very important to her to have a fence of how she envisioned this fence. Okay, that's up to her. It's their money that they're spending, and whatever direction they want to spend it, and whatever risk they want to take, that's up to them. It is self-determination. We're just simply providing some guidance, providing some tools, and hopefully getting the job done for them. And that's all I have to say about that. So,
Just one last comment from me. I go a little bit further, and I think I already may have mentioned this in my introductory talk. I say to them, I'm never going to know this case as well as you guys, but that's not going to stop me from giving my opinion as to what a smart thing to do is. So I offer opinions.
Okay.
And, you get out of this thing. This is a good way to get out of this as far as I'm concerned. You guys think about it, but it seems to me a good thing.
So. Right. And yeah, look, I tried cases. You've tried cases for many, many years. The idea that fairness comes out of the trial process any more than it comes out of mediation, it really doesn't. It's very seldom, however, I will just point this out, in trial, very seldom are jurors looking at what is in the best interest of each of the parties. They are charged with applying the law to the facts that they perceive. It may be fair, it may be not fair, who knows? But it's going to be a result. Is that result something that the parties are worth in, are considering investing in? Is that a worthwhile investment? For some people, yes. Some people, no. But we're not in the is it worth it business. We're in the can we get it resolved? And if we can take it just one step beyond getting it resolved, in many instances, we have the opportunity to not only get the dispute resolved, but also put the conflict behind people like neighbors, so they can get on with their lives and actually coexist. Sometimes, though, the better alternative is just move. Okay.
Okay, so can I make one last comment on that?
Absolutely.
On the neighbor disputes, my experience is rarely is there a kumbaya moment. Rarely, even when I've settled the cases, does that settle the feelings between the parties? They go on. Mm-hmm. And I think I mentioned in one of my articles that you referred to that my advice often is, I say, what you just said, if I were you, I would just move from here. Mm-hmm. So we're in accord on all of that stuff. So thank you, sir.
Mike, it is such a pleasure talking with you. I always learn something. I really do. And I think the valuable takeaways that you've discussed, coming out of a case that didn't resolve, that sometimes they just don't. So as we wrap up, Mike, how can listeners get in touch with you and book you for a mediation? Or you also act as a discovery referee and in other capacities.
Right, as an arbitrator, and I'm the world record holder volunteer in the Orange County Superior Court for settlement conferences. 714-852-2000. 2773. And my email address is mbalmagus@adrservices.com.
Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you once again for another delightful conversation. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, my engineer and producer. I'm your host, Len Levy, and this is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infigen Labs, Inc. I hope you will continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.